while Ron is busy sleeping off Thanksgiving dinner, we present an encore of The Car Doctor.
Join us for the great American Thanksgiving Day tradition. The streets of New York City are lined with millions of spectators, and holiday cheer is in the air. A celebration filled with television and music's biggest stars, world-famous balloons, incredible marching bands, phenomenal floats, and
Ron and Anian
had the pleasure, oh my gosh, did I say that, of an 04 Volkswagen Jetta. Now, in all fairness to Volkswagen, so this car is 12 years old, an East Coast car, and it didn't have a drop of rust on it anywhere. Of course, it had enough oil leaks that it was probably rust-proof from now through the end of
The Car Doctor.
Don't dig until the day you die.
I've never really thought of it like that as far as a factory reboot. I think the problem becomes, you know, you're going to be sit there faced with what sort of characteristics does the vehicle have to relearn.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Give us a call on the Car Doctor 24-7, always there for you. Hotline, you can leave a message if we're not on the air live. We are live Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, as we go out across the network and streaming and podcasting and all those other types of things. But you can call the 855-560-9900 phone number anytime, day or night. Tom Ray, our chief executive producer, head cook, bottle washer, floor wiper, and everything else in between. Tony just runs the board. Tom does everything else. We'll call you back and put you in queue and talk to you about getting on this radio show. We can talk to you live and solve your problem for you right here on radio. And that's what we've been doing these past, it's coming up on 28 years now. I think next year, 2018, 1991. I don't know. I need a calculator. I got to do the math later. So, but anyway, that's what we're here for, to talk to you about your car and its problem. There's more information at cardoctorshow.com, as well as how to get podcasts and stream and all that sort of stuff. And, of course, we have a Facebook page, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, if you're so inclined. But right now, let's kick the garage doors open, because we've got an interview-free hour this hour. And we're going to go talk to Bob from Phillipsburg, New Jersey, return call and an update on the 08 Audi battery replacement. Well, Bob, I didn't see any smoke screens or any fireballs go off in the vicinity of Phillipsburg, New Jersey last week, so I assume you were able to put this battery in with no complications.
No, it worked out well anyway. By the way, I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving.
Oh, thank you. You too. Yep.
Everything.
Yep. Yeah, it was very peaceful.
That. Anyway.
It was very peaceful. Yeah.
Yeah. Replacing the battery in this car was quite interesting. I found about $2 of nickels and dimes in the back of the car because it's there by the spare tire, and had a special order. I got an Exide battery because I've had good luck with them. But anyway, got it in and then scanned it for codes, and I was really quite surprised at how many codes was this in this car, and cleared them all and everything else, though. But it does it runs a lot better
now. You scanned it prior to battery removal?
No, after.
Okay. And it said a bunch. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
As it will, though, it'd be curious to see what sort of codes it had prior to the battery install, if any, just to see if anything was there.
If
a word to the wise, chances are there wasn't a lot. You would have seen some dash lights on, but it doesn't hurt to have. Yeah, I like to do on a car such as that, of that caliber, when I'm questioning what's going to happen, I always like to look at things before and after. It's just a good way to do it. We had a 2011 Chevy Silverado this week that had a no crank condition, 31,000 mile GM truck, just out of the blue, bang, turned the key, and the dash lights would come on, and then they'd go out, and nothing else. No starter involvement, no click, not a peep out of this car. And I scanned it for codes prior, because I wanted to see, before I disconnected the battery, as my diagnosis took me closer to the inevitable starter that it eventually was. And there were a couple of U100 communication fault codes for modules that, were having issues. And it just you know, it's just something to write down and just, you know, post and print. Threw it in the file. I scanned it out to the Google Drive on the cloud. I wrote some notes on there on what it was and what I was looking for, and I'll be able to come back to it 6 months, a year, or whenever. And it just, it doesn't hurt. And obviously, after I was done, I scanned it. I had no codes, interestingly, right. In that case. So it my point is, it doesn't hurt to look both before and after. So, you know, just to have some idea of what's going on there, it can hurt.
In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be going up there because I'm trying to learn to use this VAGCOM or ROSTEC scanner. It's quite interesting, but it's involved.
Yeah.
And so I'll be checking up more and scan the whole car. One quick question that I also have for this car. Do you know of any good upholstery shops? I'm looking to replace the seat cushions, especially on the driver's side. It's like sitting on a board.
Boy, I've got to tell you, Bob, upholstery is getting to be a very lost art in New Jersey. I don't know of New York, New Jersey. I don't know of anyone around that does upholstery. There are one or two guys that I've heard of. I don't remember off the top of my head, and I hear there's a good 3 to 4 month waiting list. It's just amazing how they're just all gone. There's just nobody talking about it anymore, and a lot of the hot rod guys talk about how hard it is to find an upholstery person. I think in my next life I'm going to come back and do interiors, you know, just because it just seems like something in demand.
It was suggested also to replace, to go to Audi and just get new cushions.
Well, you know, maybe yes, maybe no, if you have no other choice, but I'm sure you'll be surprised, or if not shocked, at the price, you know, in terms of what in terms of what they cost.
I'm not concerned about price. I want quality.
Yeah, well.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah, that's the way it should be. And then, yeah, but it might really shock you, the price of him doing it and not coming out the way you like it. Because if you don't like the way the seat feels now, is the seat or is the foam, is the material in the seat pounded out, or is
it is. No, it's pounded out.
Okay.
It's like somebody was 600 pounds was sitting on it.
Right. Then it might, you know, it might even need a frame. It might even need, you know, it's like the box spring portion of it may need to be replaced too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's always a possibility. So the only other thing I would suggest is, you know, just doing a search on the net, you know, 08 Audi, you know, A3. You know, maybe there's a low mileage something out there with similar seats at half the price, and you know, that way you can get a whole seat assembly. So thank God for the internet. 10 years ago, we couldn't build a car. You know, now we can't build a car without it. So,
yep.
All right, sir.
Okay. Well, anyway, happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you, Bob. Thank you very much, and I appreciate you. I appreciate the call. Let's go over and talk to Ron Sutton, New Hampshire, 90 Bronco 2. 94 Explorer engine, and some questions about fuel economy. Ron, you're on with the Car Doctor. How can I help?
Yeah, I rebuilt the engine about a year ago. It's got about 18,000 miles on it now.
Okay.
And I started smelling a little bit of gas, and my mileage was around 14. I do a lot off-road with it. It is a daily driver, but I mainly built it for off-road. It's got 32-inch tires on it right now for the road. But anyway, I went down to get gas, and I filled it up, and I was getting 19 miles to the gallon. I was like, wow, that's really good for this motor. And the next week, I went down, filled it up, and I was getting 10 miles to the gallon. And I filled it up again, and I'm getting 13 miles to the gallon. And
changes,
I don't know if
it changes weekly?
Yeah, I mean, I do some four-wheeling, so, you know, I can contribute a little bit of the mileage to that, bad mileage to that, but not 10.
Yeah, well, does that 10 miles per gallon, has that repeated itself on a regular basis?
No, I get around 13, 14 on average.
So you had one case of 10 miles per gallon.
Right, but okay. I also had a case of 19.42 miles per gallon.
All right, but the average now is 13.
Yeah, now, it's about 13.
If you hadn't gotten the 19, would you have been upset that you got 13?
No.
Okay. So what if for whatever reason that week or those 2 weeks, the 19 and the 10 were a miscalculation somehow, some way?
Yeah, well, I considered that, and I went over the figures pretty well, and it could have been an anomaly.
Right.
But I'm just wondering, I do smell gas on occasion, and I'm wondering if it's the fuel rail, or do you know of anything? I mean, do those go bad?
Sure, they can rust out. Which engine is this? What is this, a 4-liter?
4-liter overhead valve.
Okay. What engine control system are you running? EEC4?
Yes.
Okay. So you're running an EEC4 system. You know, there is, where's the fuel pressure regulator on this? It's attached to the rail?
It is.
It is?
On passenger side, yeah.
Possibility that, you know, do you ever get a sense that it's running rich? Do you have the ability with a scan tool to look at fuel trim? I'm trying to remember in 94, there was a fuel trim modifier in EEC4 that you could tell whether it was high or low or somewhere in between and, you know, take a look and watch fuel trim while you're driving. The other thing that I have seen is I have seen that diaphragm on that fuel rail start to rupture. It gets porous, and it will actually start to pee fuel right up the vacuum line. And, you know, that can obviously be an issue. And then the other thing that comes to mind is this time of year, I see a lot of variables in fuel economy based on quality of thermostat. I don't want to assume that you've got that covered, but, yeah, thermostat off by 8 degrees can make a huge variance in fuel economy as well.
Yeah, so, I have a 190 in there now, I think.
Okay. And how long?
I bumped it up a little bit.
How long has it been in there?
2 months.
Okay.
It's a Motorcraft. I normally go with OEM.
All right, that's fine. Have you verified temperature against the stat to know that it's, you know, it's running 188 to 192 at a minimum on a cold day?
I do have gauges in the truck. I don't use Idealites any longer, so
okay.
I'm running around 190.
All right, so the thermostat's
the
working right. Yeah, okay. So then let's see if we can figure out a way to take a look at fuel trim using a scan tool. Let's see what fuel trim tells us. And then because of the bigger tires, you've changed the drive line. My only other question would be, how accurate is the odometer?
It's not. I have 373s in there, and I haven't changed them up because I didn't go over a 33-inch tire.
Okay, so when you're doing the math to figure fuel economy, how are you judging mileage?
Basically going on how many gallons I used on a tank of gas. And this has been going on for, you know, 20,000 miles or 18,000 miles.
Right, but I'm just trying to figure out, how do you know how many miles you went on that tank of gas? Let me ask the question that way, if the odometer is off.
I have a computer on board. It's in my radio that has a GPS.
Okay.
And I use the GPS, and I sync that with my manual odometer on my speedometer. And I'm within a couple of tenths, so I don't think that's an issue there.
Oh, okay, so it's off, but it's not off by a lot.
No. I mean, if I'm doing 65 on the speedometer, I'm normally doing 70.
Well, that's almost 10%, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty close.
Yeah, so 10%, I mean, if we're... You know, just trying to do the math. Just take that into consideration with your calculations, all right? Because if we're going to be scientific, I mean, the right answer is truthfully, and I'm not trying to hurt your feelings, but you got 32s, 33s on this with a 373 gear. Does it really matter what fuel economy you get? You know, it's kind of, that's part of the picture too. That it's. But I get it. Try some of those things and see where that gets you, and we'll talk again next week if we need to. Ron, I appreciate the call. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this.
First gear, it's all right. Second gear.
Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the Car Doctor, rolling along here at this hour, 855-560-9900. I want to take the call on line one in a quick second. I just want to make a comment, and I want to talk about this a little later on this hour. Has anybody seen the article from Tesla about the semis? Tesla semi and electric big rig rolls into reality. Elon Musk wears many masks. Incident entrepreneur, da, da, da. Ed Trucker to the list. Musk rolled silently into a long-anticipated and often delayed event in Hawthorne two Thursdays ago at the controls of a Tesla semi. Think of how cool that would be, an electric 18-wheeler. All right? I'm thinking about, you know, corporate headquarters is located here in the backwoods next to Route 287 in North Jersey, and you hear the trucks running up and down the highway all day long. Now it's going to, like, you're going to hear the sound of a toaster going, whoosh, whoosh, right? Like, how cool will that be? It'll just be silence. Kind of like the fans cheering at Giant Stadium, but we won't talk about that. Let's get on over and, oh, Tom's got a comment.
I was going to say, it'd be really great when you're standing on the street corner and you don't hear a combine and you get hit by the semi.
Well, you know, that is a problem, okay? That is a problem for blind people and deaf people, and they're working on that with electric vehicles. I'm not exactly sure how they're going to cure it. But that actually is a concern, no fooling. But it is, you know what? You got to give Tesla credit. Everybody's sitting here saying, hey, he's not going to be in business. He's not going to last. You know, he's on the wrong. The guy's made an 18-wheeler into an, you know, I mean, it's a giant 18-wheeler. It's an electric 18-wheeler. My gosh, that's like crazy. You know, who knows what's next? We'll be talking the electric car doctor. Be like the electric boogaloo. Let's get on over and talk to Tom, Springfield, Illinois, line one. Tom, you're at the car doctor, sir. How can I help?
Thank you. I've got a 2005 Chevrolet 5.3 liter VTEC. It's an Avalanche.
Okay.
We put a new engine in it. It sat on the sidelines for several months. Then we put a used engine in it. We've driven it for a couple of weeks. Now, all of a sudden, it goes sporadically hot. It when it's idling or when it's in park and we're just running the engine, it seems to be okay. Seems to be about 200 degrees. And then as soon as you put a load on it, there it goes up to 240, 250 before we shut it down. And then for a couple of days, that problem disappeared, and it seemed to be fine. And then I looked down at the gauge, and it's about 200. And then all of a sudden, within 10 seconds, it shoots right up to about 220, 230, and keeps going. And I'm hoping that with that many specific symptoms, maybe you could help me figure out. I did check the fluids. All are good and level. First thing I think of is a thermostat, but I haven't gone into getting that because, unfortunately, Chevy put that thermostat in a bad place. They didn't put it on top, of course.
No.
They put it down low where I have to drain the radiator, take off all the rubber housings, et cetera. So I haven't gone to the thermostat yet, but I'm hopeful maybe if I've got enough symptoms, maybe you could help me narrow down what
sure.
I need to do.
So let me ask you this. Why did you replace the engine? What failed in the old one, or how did the old one fail?
According to the mechanic, it just blew head gaskets. I don't think it didn't throw a rod or anything, but he said the engine had blown gaskets and main seals, and it had probably 160,000 miles on it.
Okay, now
and so he said we needed a different one.
Was it a cooling system head gasket type of failure? Do you know?
That I do not know. Now I can say that prior to putting it on the sidelines. And prior to putting the other engine in, it didn't seem to be having it. Now, wait a minute. No, come to think of it, now that you made me think back, there was a time when it did the same thing, but it was several months ago, and it did that one event, and then it didn't do it again.
Right. And because what I'm wondering is this what caused the old engine to fail? Is there a cooling system problem that the engine's okay here, but we're still working on the original diagnosis of why that engine failed?
I think that's plausible now that I think back to how it was acting, but we had it happen once before, as I said, and then it disappeared.
Okay.
That problem, but now, and so for a couple of weeks we drive it with the used engine, seems to be fine, temperature is fine, but now it's all over the board. I might drive it all day today and have no problem, and then I might start it in the morning and it'll get hot instantly.
So then my next question is it getting hot, too hot too fast to be real? Think about what I said there. Is it
that's highly plausible. I remember most recently, looking down at, say, it's about 200 degrees, I bet I didn't drive a block, and I looked down and it was 240.
Okay.
So that's a plausible scenario.
Right, because, well, I'll tell you what, let me pull over. I don't want to rush this. Let me pull over and take the pause, Tom, but, you know, there's a lot to think about here. When we come back, we'll finish with this. We'll finish talking to Tom out in Springfield, Illinois, 05 Chevy Avalanche. I'm Ron Anning, the car doctor. I'm coming back right after this. Stay tuned.
When the family car needs some fixing, there's only two things that really matter: getting the right part and getting some good advice. It's a pretty safe bet that with over 1 million parts in stock, Pep Boys has the right part right now. The Pep Boys pros are extensively trained to find the right part for just about any car or truck. Better yet, these pros can also handle the entire installation or service needed. It's always good to have options, and know the Pep Boys pros have it covered either way.
Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the car doctor. Tom, you're from Springfield. You're still there, sir.
Yes, sir.
So I gave you enough time to think about it. What do you think? Was it doing this with the old engine?
I think one time that my wife drives it primarily, I don't.
Right.
And one time we saw this happen and she stopped and she got me but it seemed to disappear. And now it's so sporadic and so unpredictable that I'm with you. I know where you're going. Maybe there's a sensor now that's giving us a false reading.
Right. So let's attack it like this, all right? You know, let's try and baseline this. And let me just ask you a couple of questions. When you did the engine swap, did you transfer the throttle body over from the old engine?
See, it was done for me. I'm not that good. I couldn't do my own engine. Somebody else did it. I do not know the answer to that.
Because that's important. The throttle bodies on these have coolant hoses that go into them. All right? Mm. They heat the throttle plate. They pass warm water through it. It helps the throttle plate from icing up and things like that. And I've seen cases where the throttle body bore, it's not a huge hose. You know, it's a little bigger than an eighth, maybe a quarter-inch diameter passageway. And I've seen cases where on a higher mileage that throttle body bore will get restricted and cause erratic cooling system performance. All right, so it's a simple enough thing to do. Just, you know, take the two hoses off, put a bypass tube in it, and, you know, drive the truck or try blowing through the passageway in the throttle body, make sure it's spotlessly clean. If it is, put it together. You've eliminated that. We know it's not that. All right?
Okay.
But that's something to do. The other possibility is, do we have a restrictor or do we have any kind of an issue with the heater core? Any sort of issues with heat in this vehicle?
Yeah, at the same time, we're not getting any heat. It's blowing cold. Blowing cool, not cold.
Okay, so, but when the engine is running normal, do you have, you know, when it's quote-unquote not overheating, do you have normal heat?
Yes.
So the heat goes out when the engine problem occurs, when the temperature problem occurs.
Yes.
Okay. So maybe it's real. Maybe we really do have an overheat issue. Maybe we're burping air in from somewhere. Because now we're going to also go up against the fact, how do we know the new engine, you know, new does not mean good, or replacement engine does not mean good. If it's burping air and putting air into the system somewhere, maybe it's legitimately running hot. Maybe we've got a head gasket issue here. Not to, you know, this can go a bunch of different ways. So that's why sometimes you have to prove what's good to figure out what's bad. All right? When they did the engine, what did they think of the radiator?
Again, I don't have an answer to that because I didn't supervise that. Probably should have, but I don't know. Now, I sat on the sidelines for several months, that radiator did, just sitting.
Right.
And it's an older vehicle, so we may have created some issues there.
Well, and if the radiator's original at $160,
it is.
Let me answer the question this way. My 2008 Silverado, my plow vehicle, it's got 31,000 miles on it. It's 10 years old. There's a new radiator sitting for it in the shop. I'm just going to change the radiator out after 10 years just because it's 10 years old.
I got you.
You know, and it's out in all kinds of weather, and you know, it's just plastic and aluminum today, and they're just not great. I spent the money. I paid the freight. I got an original, you know, GM radiator for it, and at least I'll have peace of mind plowing. So, you know, it might be time to consider the radiator as an issue. All right?
Okay.
That's number two. Number three, going back to the heater core, you know, I have seen cases where heater core restriction can impede flow and create some goofy overheat issues. So, you know, it would probably be a good idea to flush and back flush the heater core. Not hard to do. Are you mechanically inclined?
Enough to do that.
Okay. So the way I'm going to tell you to do it, this, if I remember right, this has quick lock connectors on it. You've got to take the quick locks off. And, you know, what I did was I've just created my own little flush kit at the shop, and I do this. I use it all the time. I went to the hardware store. I got regular hose ends, you know, a male and a female hose end set up like for the garden hose.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I put it on a heater hose, and, you know, here's my innie, here's my outie, and I put it on the heater core, and I'll put the one end on the core which way I want to go. And I usually flush in the direction of flow first, all right? And,
okay,
you know, just to kind of push it through, and I'll put a hose on the other side on the outlet, and I'll put that hose in a white bucket. White's always a dramatic color. All right. You can usually see all the crud. All right. Very easily. And I won't run a lot of water. The other thing I add to this setup is I've got, you ever see those brass shutoff valves? It's like a little hand lever that you can either go full throttle or, you know, you can shut it down to a quarter, a half, and so forth. And I'll run a quarter, maybe a half throttle of hose through the core. I don't want to break the core. I don't want to overpressurize it. Not that I think I could. City water is probably in the, you know, it depends. I think where we are, city water is like, you know, 14, 15 pounds. I don't think it's much more than that. And, you know, I just don't want to overdo it if I don't have to.
Right.
And I'll do it one way, and then I'll do it the other, and I repeat it twice, and I see what comes out. Nothing comes out. Hey, I'm great. Usually something comes out. And I wouldn't be surprised if stuff comes out, all right?
Mm.
So then you can sit there and look at what came out. I've seen cases where its content matter from the cylinder block, because the old block was decaying on the inside, and now it's deposited itself in the heater core. The answer
right.
becomes, if it's in the heater core, guess where else it is? It's in the radiator.
In the radiator.
Right.
Yep.
So that's how you kind of know what to do radiator-wise.
Okay.
Way back when I did engines, because we don't see engine failures like we once did anymore, and it's honestly not a profitable repair, not like it once was, and you just don't see a lot of it. Maybe it's because of my location in the country, right? Here I am in Bergen County, New Jersey. If the ashtray's full and the gas tank's empty, everybody wants to throw the car away. Nobody wants to fix it. Let's just go buy a new car. What the heck? As a matter of fact, somewhere I've got today's newspaper. Do you know what your new GMC Yukon is?
Oh, I've got over 50.
50? Where's that? I got it here somewhere. I've got to find it. $68,820.
That's crazy.
And I said, what caught my eye was the monthly payment. Wait a minute. Let me turn. We're going to have silence on radio. Keep talking for a minute, Tom.
Your Tom or my Tom?
Your Tom. Here it is. Wait a minute. I got it. Wait a minute. Here it is. A 2017 GMC Yukon SLT. This is what got me. You know what you can lease this puppy for?
Oh, I'm going to guess $650.
$699 a month for 3 years.
Wow.
39 months, rather. $700. That wasn't my first mortgage payment. I'm dating myself, but holy cow.
I know. Us small-town farm boys out here in the Midwest, we try to fix things. We don't try to buy $70,000 vehicles.
Well, and, you mean this vehicle is still $70,000 out there in farm country? You mean
it'd be close. It might be a grand different, but not much.
They don't give you guys a discount?
You kidding me?
Yeah, I know. I listen.
You know what farmland prices are out here? $15,000 an acre.
Right. Yeah. I believe me. And listen, right next door to corporate headquarters here, there's a farm on the backcountry road that we're located on. There's probably, I'm going to say, there's a good 18 to 20 acres of land there that they actually still farm with. All right? And you can see the housing development is encroaching. You know what those acres of land are going for?
I'm going to guess $500,000 an acre.
$500,000 an acre.
Yep. Well, I'm getting pretty good.
Yeah, you're getting pretty good. You're ready to move into, come on out to New Jersey.
Yeah, I like it out here in the Midwest.
Yeah, well, I understand that. I really do. But I look at the price of these things, and I go, I saw $70,000 for a vehicle, and I said, wait a minute, maybe it's time to start doing engines and transmissions again at that level. And just, we'll take your vehicle, put $10,000 in it, resurrect it, and send it on its way. It's got to be cheaper. So
yeah.
It just would make sense. Anyway, back to your issue. I would think twice about the radiator. I would definitely do a back flush on the heater core. I'd look at the throttle body, make sure the fans are working. I would definitely think about doing a thermostat. What I would really ultimately like to do is get a scan tool on this vehicle. Do you have any kind of a scan tool?
No, but I have access to one. Would it pick up something in the cooling heating system as opposed to the engine?
It could, but what I'm more concerned about is I'd love to see you set up your wife with a scan tool bringing up the coolant PID.
Okay.
And tell her. I want to know. If the coolant PID says 240 and the dash gauge says 240, then I've legitimately got an issue. If the coolant PID says
scan tool,
will you stop that? If the coolant PID says 200 and the dashboard says 240 and you have no heat and it's blowing cold air, now I've got two separate problems. I'm just trying to eliminate the possibilities here. All right.
But one last thing, if you don't mind.
Yes, sir.
If it happens to be head gaskets again, what's my repair cost for head gaskets?
Well, in New Jersey, you're probably in the neighborhood of $2,500, $3,000. Out there in farm country, I think from the sounds of it, you guys fix everything from tractors to everything under
True.
The sun. I bet you could do head gaskets on that thing if you took your time. I really do.
That's great.
I really do. It's nuts and bolts at that point.
You're giving me. You're giving me a system here to go down and check all those things. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no, and it's just sometimes, and they say this, and I say this all the time, sometimes knowing what's bad is proving what's good. Because if you eliminate enough of what's good, sooner or later you find out what's bad. Too many times guys approach the car and they say, I can't find out what's wrong. It's an intermittent problem. Okay, prove what's good. Tell me what's good. And you know that it can't be that. Then we'll move on to the next thing. And then, the last commentary has to be, this probably has an electric cooling fan on it. How are the cooling fans working?
One came on about 210. I don't think the other one came on, but I'm wondering if that's for a separate system.
Right, and let's understand how that works. So that's the second part of this. All right, sir?
Thank you.
You're very welcome, Tom. Let me know what happens. I'm kind of curious, and I'd love to hear the final answer.
I'll do that. Thank
you. Okay, you're very welcome. 855-560-9900. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor, coming back. We're right after this.
What's better than Black Friday specials? Well, free car advice from the Car Doctor. Here's Ron.
Hey, welcome back. Ron and Andy, the Car Doctor. Let's roll over and talk to Steve, Roanoke, Virginia, and some questions about warranty. Steve, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. Hope your Thanksgiving was good. What's going on?
It was great. Hi, Ron. Good to be back on. My extended warranty on my 2013 Honda is going to expire soon. Do you have any advice on a good sort of aftermarket company, or can Honda do something beyond $100,000? What I'm really searching for is maybe $100 a year premium with a $500 deductible. Probably it'd be the other way around.
Yeah, and I don't know that one is going to exist, Steve. My concern becomes an aftermarket warranty policy. The ones that I've dealt with in the shop and the ones that I hear people talking about usually don't cover enough unless you're paying a premium. And the ones that you're paying the premium for example, we just had a customer with an 09 Chevy Malibu. He bought the car used 3 years ago. He put a premium policy on it. The policy cost him $2,800 3 years ago. All right, and it covered him up. It covered him up to 109,000 miles. The policy just expired, and they covered just about everything, but not everything. And there were still some cases where he was laying money out of pocket. And, at almost $3,000, he didn't have a trans failure, he didn't have engine failure. A lot of it was brake work. A lot of it was, predictable things at that mileage. And he can't get another policy on it. They won't cover the car beyond this age or mileage. And the concern I've got is, in order to get the coverage, I want to know what's that company going to do for me and what's the likelihood they're going to be around. I know Honda's going to be around. I don't know if XYZ Warranty Company, based out of Delaware or Maryland or whoever's the easiest one to go bankrupt in and not get sued, will be around. So that's always a concern of mine. So great question. I would tell you, if you're going to do anything, go back to Honda. But I will add this. The way you maintain a car, I don't know if I'd worry about it. I think I'd pay yourself that warranty policy. You're going to typically expect to spend, I would guess, between $1,500 and $2,000 on most warranty policies. Pay yourself that money, put it in the bank, let it collect some interest, add $125 a month to it, and I bet 3 years from now, when nothing goes wrong, you'll have that money to take and go on a nice vacation with or something else. So just some food for thought. It just seems like you might end up overpaying for that one because of the age and the mileage on that vehicle. And again, I know how you maintain a car. Maintenance is the key, and that's what gives you longevity. 855-560-9900. The Car Doctor's coming back right after this. Hey, welcome back. We're on Andy and the Car Doctor. I want to thank you for spending some time with me this hour as we got together and we talked about, I think we covered a lot of things, and I hope you learned something. I want to go back to the Elon Musk article. The new vehicle that Elon Musk is talking about, the electric 18-wheeler, for those of you that might just be tuning in, will start production in 2019. No price tag was mentioned. I can't imagine what that's going to cost. Looking like something Batman might have designed, the Tesla semi-prototype is heavy on aerodynamic stylings that are said to, along with its electric engine, drive the cost per mile below that of today's gas-powered machines. Well, shouldn't that be diesel-powered machines? Tesla officials said while giving USA Today a walk-around before the event unfolded. Even with 80,000 pounds, it'll get up to 860 miles per hour in 20 seconds, Musk said, hopping out of a truck. What about up a hill, he was asked, but nobody answered that. More significantly for trucking companies, Musk said a standard diesel truck would be 20% more expensive to operate than a Tesla truck, $1.25 per mile compared to $1.50. Here's where I got to see Musk emphasizes performance. Tesla trucks can hit 65 miles per hour versus 45 miles per hour, up a 5% grade compared to a standard truck. Then the biggest applause in hoots accompanied this statistic, a 500-mile range at maximum weight and highway speeds. So think about it, all right? They're going to actually, there's a little Orwellian here maybe, but there's a little 1984, but the government is, if they bring these things online, they're going to actually mandate when the drivers have to pull over. The vehicle's going to run out of juice, and they're going to have to pull over at a certain amount of time, and it's going to take 30 minutes to bring them up to 80%. So in a way, they're going to actually keep the highway safer, I think, because we'll be forcing drivers to take a rest break. Of course, they might be pulled over on the side of the highway, and I can just see it now where somebody's going to come through the woods and, can I borrow an electrical outlet? My truck ran out of juice over here, and you know we're going to be seeing extension cords running through the woods out to people's houses to, you know, but we'll see. Interesting, but I still give him a lot of credit. You know what? The future is here. The future is now. And you've just got to keep watching this saying, wow, electric vehicles and, you know, electric trucks. So definitely kind of neat stuff. So anyway, that about wraps it up this hour. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. More information at cardoctorshow.com. The 855 number is there for you. Use it anytime you can. It's 24/7. Till the next time, remember this. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.